Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity, the leading podcast for residential service contractors, sponsored by Service Roundtable and hosted by David Heimer.
Hi, welcome to Profiles in Prosperity. I'm David Heimer. Today I'm talking with Ron Strelke. Ron is the owner and president of Force Home Services in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He is a Service Nation Advisory Board mentor. He is a well-known and respected member of our industry, a contributor to his community, an outdoorsman, husband and father, a really smart guy. I'm looking forward to talking with him. So, Ron Strelke, welcome to Profiles in Prosperity.
Thanks, David. Hopefully I can live up to your intro. Thanks much.
So you have got a really interesting story about joining our industry. Tell us about how you got into this.
Oh, sure. So back in 2001, I'd been in the wine distribution industry for 25 years, most of my career, and it required traveling throughout the United States because I was on the sales side and was regional manager for a sales team. Anyway, I was on the road better than 50% of the time. I had three small children. I think they were probably ages 3 through 5, 6, 7 years old, and I realized I was missing a lot of family time with my traveling. So just kind of out of the blue, a fellow church member said, hey, I'm retiring from my HVAC business that I owned for the last 20 years. And he wasn't offering to sell it to me. It was just a conversation. And I said, well, that kind of interests me. I've always had an entrepreneurial bug. Anyway, long and short of it is, within a couple of months, we had come to an agreement. I bought a very, very small HVAC company, quit my corporate job. Matter of fact, I was in downtown Addison, this is here in the DFW area where my corporate offices were, cleaning out my desk for the last time on 9/11. Matter of fact, I sat there in my office and watched one of the planes fly into one of the towers, the second one.
A memorable day in a number of ways.
Yeah, for sure. Because, I left a very secure job for a very insecure future.
Just as the business world was getting really nervous and people were getting really nervous and we're getting ready to enter into a war. Yeah. What could go wrong?
Yeah, that's right. Sounds like a great plan to me. So anyway, that's how I jumped into the HVAC business. In September of 2001, I became an HVAC contractor and an entrepreneur.
Wow. So how did it go?
Kind of a rocky start. When I say a rocky start, I know nothing about repairing HVAC systems. I knew nothing about designing HVAC systems. The previous owner hung around for about 2 months, showed me the ropes on the new construction side of their business, designing systems for new custom homes. That was his primary work. He did a couple of custom home builders, did about 12 or 14 houses a year, and then serviced those customers that he had installed the air conditioners on their new homes. So he was about a $300,000, $350,000 a year business, very, very small. And again, I took it over right there when everybody got pretty nervous economically speaking because of 9/11, the impending war, and building kind of dropped off. And I realized that I didn't know what I was doing. So I jumped into a best practices group. It was Airtime 500 back then, and let them convince me that I needed to get out of the new construction business and become a service repair and replacement business, residential only, owner occupied home. So that's the route I started going down. We didn't just totally walk away from the new construction business. We had to have a transition period. I needed to bring some income in. But over the course of the next, I'd say 3 years, we went from 80% new construction down to less than 10% new construction.
Yeah, good move. So tell me about Force Home Services now.
From over the last, 22 years now, we've had some pretty significant growth. And we had one period back in 2008 where we took a pretty big hit along with the economy, but learned some lessons back then as well. So I think we've grown to about 15, 16 employees back in 2008 and thought we knew what it was going to be like to take that next step. I think we were trying to go from 1.8 million in total revenue to a pretty aggressive 3 million and started hiring all the infrastructure to do that as well as the field. And the economy didn't cooperate and our, experience level wasn't commensurate with our aggressive growth plan. We flailed and actually ended up becoming a smaller company in 2009 and then kind of rebuilt from there. But in 2009, I had known Ben Stark for probably about 2 years prior to that, prior to 2009. And during my struggles, he came to me and said, hey, I've got this company up in Denton where you are. He said, I'm tired of operating it. He said, I could roll it into my company, but I really don't want to service this area up north where you are. And so he said, I'll sell this company to you. By the way, it's got a plumbing division that goes with it. Pretty small. I think it was about maybe a $400,000 or $500,000 annual revenue company at the time. And probably half of that was plumbing, which I had no experience in. But anyway, Ben, I say he sold it to me. He darn near gave it to me just to help me out. This is the kind of guy he is. But at the same time, he said,
Ben is a good guy to know.
Yeah, he really is. You know? He's saved my tail in a number of different ways, but he's an awesome mentor and just a real good guy. He loves to see the success of everyone else in the industry.
Yeah, a wonderful human being.
And that was about the time that I think he had been, I can't remember when Service Roundtable started, but your guys were just starting up Service Nation Alliance. Was it around 2008, 2009?
Yep, started Service Roundtable in 2002 and launched Service Nation Alliance in 2010.
2010. Yeah. Okay, so I joined the Service Roundtable group, I'm pretty sure in 2009. And then Ben really, really encouraged me. He said, you need to check out the Service Nation program. He said, it really gets you ingrained in the best practices of the business. So by the time you guys were starting up Service Nation, I was already on board. And anyway, I've been a Service Nation member ever since. And that was really a big turning point for me. Like I said, I was previously with Airtime 500, so a decent best practices group, but some of their practices I really didn't necessarily agree with. And I had already dropped them. I think I dropped them in 06 or 07. And when you guys came along and the Service Nation group, and I really was endeared to that entire process and started right away attending all of the seminars and educational pieces. AB group was just evolving, jumped in an AB group. Steve Miles was running my group at the time, another great mentor, and he was on skyrocketing on growth at the particular time. So he was a lot of help in that regard. But, from 2009 all the way up to today, it's really been following Service Nation Alliance and various different mentors in that group and implementing their practices. And we've grown now to a $5 million in annual revenue. It's been a slow but steady growth. We're not huge by any means. We have 30 employees. 60% of our revenue is still in HVAC. 40% of it is in plumbing. That's what we're striving to continue to grow the plumbing. We'd like to get it to 50-50. Same customer base, same set of opportunities. We just need to continue to focus on plumbing and learn how to take advantage of those opportunities with those that customer base that we've already got built. So that's kind of where we're headed.
Wow. It's a great story. Tremendous growth. There's something to be said for the steady growth. I think you sleep better at night. So you are a guy that is known for being very focused on your team, the people you work with. How do you make a great environment for your team?
Well, it kind of goes back to when I wasn't focused on my team. So, I said we had that planned growth spurt in 2008 and it kind of fell apart and we took a big step back in 2009. And that was kind of a realization moment for me too, that I really didn't have a team of people that had total buy-in to what we were trying to accomplish. One, I hadn't communicated my vision well enough, but two, I really hadn't connected with my team. And therefore, they, again, just didn't see the vision the same way. And that's kind of where things really fell apart. And came to the realization I was just a little too old school in the thought process that, you don't have to have happy employees. You just need people to show up for work and go do their job, right? I mean, real kind of the way industry was 20 years ago when I was in the corporate world. There weren't all these warm fuzzies between management and field personnel. It was just you go out and do your job and bring back the revenue and everybody will get along fine. So total adjustment there. And about that time, even through Service Nation Alliance, is when they really started talking culture and I started paying attention. And we have really formed a culture that I feel like is, focused on the employee. And the employee, when I say employee, it's really team members. It's focused on team members and making them feel like they're a part of the team, but really that team is family. So we say we're a family-owned operation. My oldest daughter works for me, but she has no interest in owning or running this company. So she is not necessarily in the line of succession. She'll inherit the money when I pass off of this earth, but she won't inherit the business. So the company family is all the team members. So we've really shifted our focus over the last decade to 12 years, focusing again on family and then community and then charity. And that's pretty much the culture that we provide. If you come on board here, you get a feel immediately that everybody is pretty much ingrained in each other's professional life, of course, but personal life as well. And therefore, it really does feel like a family. So I think that's the big difference for us.
That's an interesting transition. It's a real growth. You know, you and I are probably comparable ages, and you're right. When we got into the corporate world, it was show up, do your job, get paid, be happy.
Yeah, for sure.
Keep your complaints to yourself.
if you're not happy, act like it anyway.
So I found something on your website that I don't think I have seen on any other website in our industry. You have memorials for two of your coworkers who are no longer alive. It's unusual and it's really nice. So what prompted you to do that?
Well, so number one was on there is Lisa. And Lisa was a CSR for us. And she was with us for about, I think, 7 or 8 years. And she passed in 2018. Lisa was our first dedicated CSR, and she was definitely in my 22 years in this industry, the most impactful employee that ever came through this company. When I say wow, impactful, she impacted the lives of everybody that she touched on. And that included, you know, obviously all of our team members, but all of our customers as well. And what was unique was she was a very, very broken individual. She was an alcoholic and struggled with alcoholism mightily, missed a lot of work because of it. But inside of that, you know, obviously, like most people with addictions, obviously they're not taking care of themselves, but she was uber focused on taking care of others, which works out great for CSR, right? I mean, she had true empathy for everybody that she worked with and every customer that called in. At one point, she had dispatching responsibility, and we had to take that away from her. We wouldn't even let her into the dispatching software because everybody she talked to, she felt like it was her duty to personally make sure that they were taken care of and not taken care of in general, taken care of right now. So she would commit to, oh, I'll have a technician out there within the hour. Well, I'm sorry, but all of our technicians are busy right now, and we can't get anybody out there even today. But, you know, that was her attitude, whether she was, you know, with one of our team members or with a customer on the phone. That was the most important person in her world, and she did everything within her power to help them, to take care of them, to make sure that, you know, their pain was eased, even though she was in a lot of emotional pain herself. And we has dealt with, I guess is the way to say it, dealt with this for, you know, 8 years that Lisa was with us. And like I said, everyone loved her like she was their closest friend, their sister. Well, she also, too, you know, every time a customer would call in, they would start to understand her heart and her compassion. And they would appeal to her to call in, hey, I've got this neighbor that's elderly that doesn't have any air conditioning. Can you guys do something to help them out? Or I'm involved in this charity. And we service, a lot of times focused on the elderly, we service the senior citizens in the community, and we've got a whole host of people that we need to help out with air conditioning and plumbing. And she was always right on board to start helping out. So that's where she kind of just drove us into a more focused community involvement. We did a charitable contest online on our website once a quarter where we would compete between three different charities that they would just have a voting contest, vote for your favorite charity of these three. And we captured emails. That was our benefit. But then we would donate a certain amount of money to the first, second, and third place on these charities. And then, you know, that meant we were getting involved with three new charities every quarter, three new nonprofits. And Lisa was the point person on that. So she just got us more and more ingrained into charitable contributions and helping out throughout the community. So when she passed, we wanted to honor her heart for our customers and the charities that we were working with. So we created Lisa's Legacy. And initially, the way it was set up is we took 1 month's club memberships dues and turned around and put that into Lisa's Legacy. And Lisa's Legacy funded any charitable contributions that we might make or any work that we would go out and do for, again, seniors and just people in need. We ended up really focusing on single moms, seniors that were living in poverty, but lived in their own home and couldn't afford it. And then we also do work with Habitat for Humanity. And she hooked us up with a nonprofit called LifeWorks, which helps mentally challenged adults transition into independent life. Matter of fact, one of the clients working for us right now, she's worked for us for about 2 years. But anyway, that started off, it was 1 month's worth of club dues that got put into Lisa's Legacy. And that was about, I think it was at the time, it was about $12,000 was 1 month's worth of club dues. Well, the first year we blew that number out of the water. And now we're up to just about 1% of our annual revenue goes directly back into Lisa's Legacy. So we don't do the Comfort Club dues anymore. We do a really just need-based. I say 1% of our annual revenue. That's just kind of a coincidental number. We don't plan that out. Somebody calls up, we just go take care of it. So that's where Lisa's Legacy evolved from. That's why she's memorialized on our website. And then the other young man is on there. His name's Zach. We've had the pleasure of hiring a number of vets throughout the time I've been here. And you know, one of the things we discovered that a lot of veterans that were deployed have come back. We've dealt with this with PTSD, and Zach was suffering from severe PTSD, but he was a sharp young man. He came in as an HVAC installer. He became a lead installer in a very short period of time just because of his focus and his dedication. And then we made him an install manager. He was managing a couple of install teams. And he's a great communicator, a great educator, and he was really going places, whether it was with us or with somebody else. But unfortunately, the PTSD really caught up with him. He was very, very troubled, and he took his own life in 2019, really just about exactly 1 year after Lisa had passed. And another beloved employee, we memorialized Zach on our website just for that reason. He was quite beloved.
Wow, what a great thing to do. And I mean, it's really hard to lose people, period. It's really hard to lose members of your team. It's hard on the company. So what a great way to remember them and honor them. Good for you guys.
That whole time frame was really kind of a turning point for me. And I can tell you that I got into this business to make money. That was my main focus, you know, make a living for my family. And I don't know that I had any altruistic aspirations. I was just trying to make a substantial living for my family and for myself, and probably a little bit selfish. But you know, I really, through that time period, kind of came to the realization, you know, those two people were so impactful in my life that, you know, that's why, it's pretty much why God put me here. He didn't put me here just to, you know, make a quick fortune and retire. He put me here to impact the lives of others, particularly my teammates, and them impact my life as well. So that's kind of where you talk about culture. That's where we had another real culture shift. Don't like to lose anybody, but it was certainly ultimately a positive impact on my life. And I think a lot of other people inside this company as well.
Great way to think about it. It really changes how you do everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Well, what a great story. Thank you for telling me that. So we've talked about the culture. In our industry, it's hard to find and keep good people. What have you guys done? What works for you guys?
First off, we made a very conscious decision a few years back to start hiring based off of three key areas. First and foremost, it's attitude. So when we are doing an initial phone interview or a sit-down face-to-face interview, 100% of our focus is on understanding what your attitude is. If you don't have a positive attitude, then this probably isn't the place that you're going to fit in. And then secondarily, but a close second, is your set of values, your personal values. If your values aren't in alignment with ours, then again, you're probably not going to be a good fit. And then third, and actually somewhat of a distant third, is aptitude. We feel like we can train to aptitude. You can't train to attitude and values. Those are things that, you know, are pretty much ingrained in you. So with that in mind, we, like everybody else, we go everywhere to find people. We are partnered with Higher Dimensions. So, you know, Indeed through Higher Dimensions, ZipRecruiter, all those, they broker all those online recruiting sites. We get a lot of resumes back in through Higher Dimensions. But to be perfectly honest, we probably only find value in maybe 1 in 100. And that's probably an exaggeration. It may be 1 in 200. I want to say we get, with all the positions we list for, we get between 20 and 40 resumes a day through Higher Dimensions. And then you have to filter through those to find one or two if you're lucky. But outside of that, we do, you know, recruiting page on our website. We use Facebook for recruiting. We do internal recruiting, which is pay somebody a $500 bonus if they bring on a friend, family member to the team, and then another $500 if they stick for 90 days. We work through some local trade schools. We, you know, have associations with a couple of trade schools. And then I'm on an advisory board for a community college that does HVAC and plumbing trade. So we've got some connections there. And then we moved into a new building just recently, and it's a little more high profile in the area in Denton where we reside. And I tell you what, we've just had a tremendous amount of walk-in traffic in the last, I've been here for 7 months, and I think our last three new hires, and these are experienced techs, had been walk-ins. They come in and said, hey, we saw your building. We jumped on your website, started looking at your reviews, checked out your core values, and decided this is where we wanted to work.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we go everywhere and anywhere to find employees. But one of those three hires that I said was a walk-in, well, his name's Keyshawn. He had actually come to us 2 years ago. We didn't necessarily remember him, but he remembered us. He came and interviewed with us a couple of years ago, and he was fresh out of a trade school. He wanted to be a technician. Apparently, we said, you know, we can't help you out on the technician side. We can hire you as an installer and train in a training position, and maybe over the course of the next year to 2 years, you can progress into a technician's role, and we'll train you for that as well. And, you know, he said, thanks, but no thanks, and went on. Well, he came back here about 3 months ago, just walked in and said, I interviewed here 2 years ago, and I decided that I want to come to work here now. And it kind of blew the hair back of the office manager that was talking to him. He said, well, let me go talk. He said, you know, last time I was here, I talked to Drew and Ron. Drew's my operations manager. And you know, I'd like to talk to him. He was very professional, presented himself very well, but was pretty aggressive in his intent to talk to Drew. Well, Drew happened to be here. Office manager went back and grabbed him. They sat down and talked. Well, Keyshawn had made up his mind 2 years ago when he was in here that this is the place he wanted to work. And he went out and got a job as an entry-level technician at a competitor south of here and worked for them for 2 years and trained. And once he got the 2 years of experience and that he thought we required, he came back here and said, I want to go to work for you guys. And we hired him on the spot.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. What a great story.
Yeah, you never know where your new employees are going to come from or just when they're going to pop up.
Looking back over the time that you've been the owner, thinking about all the experiences you've had, what you've learned, if you could go back in time, talk to that guy that had just bought Forest Home Services, what would you tell him?
Probably to be diligent about implementation of what I've learned through these best practices groups. I think that was my biggest shortcoming. I understood and embraced everything that I was learning from Service Nation Alliance, but I don't think I was diligent about implementing those things. And then also hand in hand with that is, you know, to have started earlier in developing relationships with the mentors and the fellow contractors and Service Nation. I have a lot of fantastic relationships now that, you know, I lean on heavily to keep me motivated and also to continue to improve in my leadership skills and my company development. But I think if I would have really locked into that 8 or 10 years ago, I'd be in a much different place today than I am. So, yep, I'd be telling myself, be diligent about implementation of what you've learned and develop those relationships.
Great advice. We learn from other people, and we just have to force ourselves to implement. Good stuff. Ron, thank you so much for doing this. It has been a real joy to talk to you and hear about the company. I'm really impressed with what you've done. You're so thoughtful about your business and making it a great business for the community and for your employees. Congratulations on all that. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Dave.
We're always looking for good ideas and interviews for our podcast. If you have an idea or maybe you think you should be interviewed, just shoot an email to profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. That's profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. If you think what we're doing has any value, it would be very helpful if you would give us a great rating on iTunes. Thanks for your support. Hope to see you again soon. Bye.